I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you along on this Monday, January the 8th. It's coming up now on about 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. Wondering this hour if you think it's wrong for a CEO like Home Depot's Robert Nardelli, who was ousted last week, to walk away with a $210 million severance package. $210 million for a job not well done. The company's share price dropped 8% or so under Nardelli's reign as CEO, and Home Depot's shareholders were upset, reportedly, with his lavish compensation over his six-year tenure. Yet, the board gives him more than $200 million as a golden parachute. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. What's your reaction to this? In Madison, 263-1890. 263-1890. Should there be some sort of law against this sort of thing? Should there be a limit to the amount of money a corporate CEO should earn? Should there be, more open rules like those supported by Barney Frank, who says he might reintroduce his legislation dealing with corporate pay? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We will talk with a guest this hour who says that Home Depot's board of directors ought to be ashamed. She is Nell Minow, editor of The Corporate Library, an independent research firm that specializes in executive compensation and other corporate governance issues, and she joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm very glad to be able to talk about this subject because it's an outrage what Nardelli got paid, not just for leaving, the $200 million for leaving, but the $300 million he got paid for the job that he did.
Yeah, so why is that an outrage?
Because he didn't earn it. I mean, I'm all in favor of people earning a tremendous amount of money. You're not going to hear me complain about Bill Gates or, somebody who starts a company or Warren Buffett, who, by the way, whose pay is quite low. I just object when CEOs get paid an enormous amount of money without performing. I mean, just a couple of weeks ago, before Nardelli, we had the CEO of Pfizer, Hank McKinnell, who was fired for taking the stock price down 40% during his tenure. He got a $200 million payout also.
Yeah, so what in the world are is the board of directors doing at Home Depot or Pfizer? Why are they giving these corporate executives all this money for not doing a good job?
Well, it's a complete fallacy. If you look at the people who are in the very upper echelon of pay, there are really only five jobs that can get you paid at that level. And they are, of course, movie star, rock star, athlete, investment banker, and CEO.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the other four, they're the ultimate pay for performance. You can watch Reese Witherspoon's pay go up and down depending on the box office of her last film. And, of course, in athletics, there are a lot of people who are on farm teams and never make it all the way up to the top. And a lot of the pay that athletes get comes from endorsements. And when, you know, they do something bad, they lose all their endorsements. That's a very tight pay performance link. Same thing's true with rock stars. Rock stars, you know, do very well while they're selling records. And then when they're not, their labels cut them off. And investment bankers, they're out the door if they don't deliver, too. CEOs are the only ones where there's no link between pay and performance, and not coincidentally, CEOs are the only ones who get to pick the people who set their pay. They decide who's on their board of directors, and it's a very cozy little group.
And speaking of not being linked to performance, Lowe's, the other competitor for Home Depot, their CEO earns less and does better.
That's right. He gets paid quite a modest amount by CEO standards, and you could say the same thing for the CEO of Costco. So what I think is the important point is you have to look at CEO pay like any other allocation of assets by the corporation. Just think about CEO pay the same way as if you would take that same $200 million and you would buy a new division or put it into R&D or something like that. Are you getting a return on that investment? You look at it the same way you would look at any other payment made by the company. And yet, the return on investment for these CEO pay packages is less than a piggy bank. They're losing money on this. And yet the boards of directors will still say to you, boy, there are very few people that are that talented. It's a market situation. Now, in the case of Nardelli at Home Depot, he was somebody who had a great track record working for GE. He was one of the top three candidates who didn't make it as the replacement for Jack Welch. And so everybody wanted him to come work there. Home Depot had to compete, that's true, to get him, had to offer him the highest dollar. The problem is, I always say that CEOs should have to make the same disclaimer as mutual funds. Past performance is no guarantee of future performance. And when you do go for these big-ticket guys, when you do pay these huge amounts of money, over and over again, we have seen you don't get what you pay for.
Yeah. So the Home Depot board, though, gave him this golden parachute or this severance deal. They sort of agreed to this before he was even hired.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And that's what I mean when I say that mm-hmm. they competed for him against other people. And one of the things that he looked for, this is how you know he's the wrong guy for the job, is he said, I will not take the job unless I have that downside protection, unless I'm absolutely guaranteed that no matter how I do, I'm going to come out of this all right. Well, anybody that says that to you, that's when you look for the button on your desk marked eject, the one that opens up the trap door under his chair.
Well, let's talk about Barney Frank, the U.S. representative from Massachusetts,
yes.
who wants to push for legislation to give shareholders a greater say over what CEOs make.
Yes, and I very much support that. It's a little bit tricky because ever since 1789, corporate governance laws, the laws that have to do with boards of directors and the way corporations are governed, has been a matter of state law. And what that has meant is that Delaware, which has the most corporate-friendly laws, has got just about all of the top companies incorporated there. So there's a very limited federal role. And it's important to remember that all of the problems that we have right now, all of them, were caused by the last time Congress stepped into this back in 1991. Back in those days, it seems silly now, we were complaining about CEOs who are getting paid $20 million, 10% of what they're getting paid now. And what Congress did was they stepped in and said, all right, we're going to change the tax code so that only the first $1 million of pay to the CEO is tax deductible as a business expense unless it's stock options. Well, two things happened. One, everybody got a raise up until $1 million. And two, everybody started getting boatloads of stock options, and that's exactly when we got into this mess.
Yeah, so what's the fix to this mess?
Well, in my opinion, it has to be giving the shareholders more of a say about who serves on the board. Right now, let's say Dana Mead, the chairman of the Compensation Committee at Pfizer, for example, why should he continue to serve on the board? How do we get rid of him? Well, right now, it's just about impossible. But if we required that he would get 50% of the shareholder vote in order to be able to serve, I think he'd be off the board in a year. And so I think the important thing is to give shareholders more of a say in who serves on the board, because if directors know they're going to be booted off if they overpay the executives, I think they won't do it anymore. Now, Barney Frank is proposing, among other things, he likes that idea, and he's going to work on that idea, but he's also proposing the idea of a shareholder vote on CEO pay packages. And they're trying that in the UK right now, and it's working very well. However, in the U.S., it's a little problematic because do you vote your proxies? You get those blue shrink wrap things? Yes, that's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And the problem is, so there's you, there's the individual. The other big shareholders are the institutional shareholders, the pension funds. Now, the Wisconsin State Pension Fund is one of the best, but it's one of the few that will actually vote against these plans. Most of the pension funds will just vote yes.
Yeah. Our lines filled up quickly on this issue. Dale in Winter is with us. Hi, Dale.
Hi. How are you doing?
Very good.
I just finished reading a book called Pay Without Performance that goes through the myriad of ways that the current disclosure laws allow corporate boards to camouflage the CEO pay that they're actually expensing at the expense of the shareholders. And it seems to me that, shareholders rights and voting for board members has some opportunity, but I also think there has to be a clear way for these types of arrangements to be reported, because the embarrassment of board members voting for this kind of stuff, if they really understood it, I think would dissuade some of these extravagant pay packs. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you've got more faith in the embarrassability of corporate executives and directors than I do, because I have found over the last 20 years I've been working on this that they are just about unembarrassable. You can apparently live with a lot of embarrassment for $200 million. But I will say there is some good news, and that is that after a lot of pressure, the SEC developed new rules, the best rules ever, on CEO pay disclosure, which go into effect this year. And we're very excited about that. That's the good news. The bad news is that one day before Christmas, the Christmas weekend last month, the SEC gave corporate America a great big Christmas present, and they rescinded, even before it went into effect, one of those rules, which had to do with valuing stock options. So we're very, very disappointed about that. But, of course, we, my firm at Corporate Library, we will continue to do the math and let people know what that real number is. And overall, I have to say, I totally support and endorse the SEC's new disclosure rules, which are by far the best we've ever had.
We're talking with Nell Minow. She is editor of the Corporate Library, a research firm that specializes in executive compensation and other corporate governance issues. We're talking about corporate pay, CEO pay, talking about legislation that might try to rein in the CEO pay at U.S. companies. All of this prompted by the news last week that Home Depot's CEO, who was fired for not doing a good job, walked off with a $210 million severance package. 1-800-642-1234. What do you think? Should there be a law to rein this in? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, about 22 minutes past 8 o'clock right now. Stay tuned. Coming up, Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock, and she will be talking with a guest about President Bush's new Deputy Secretary of State and new Director of National Intelligence. We'll find out what this restructuring of the Bush administration means for Iraq and the new Iraq plan. That's coming up after 9 o'clock. We're talking about corporate pay and the golden parachute packages for CEOs. And our next caller is Larry in Kingston. Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I heard somewhere that in Japan that the highest paid executive cannot make more than 50 times the amount of the amount paid to the lowest employee. So if the janitor makes 40 grand a year, the chief executive can't make more than 50 times that, which I think comes to 2 million.
Yeah, so you wonder if that's a good idea?
I think that would be a wonderful idea. You know, it would increase the pay of the middle class, I think, spread the wealth more. The middle class is getting crushed because of all these high-paid executives, you know. And what does somebody need with 200 and some million anyways?
Nell Minow, is that true, first of all, in Japan? Is there a limit like that on CEO pay, do you know?
It's not exactly true in Japan. And the problem with comparing what we do to Japan is that the one advantage of our system here in the United States is that we do get much better disclosure. The disclosure rules in Japan are, let me put it this way, they're very poor. And so, yes, the disclosed pay of the CEOs is around that range. However, they get a tremendous number of other benefits and perquisites that are not disclosed. So they'll get $1 million country club membership paid for, and it's, in essence, it's much closer to the American than you might think. So it is an issue worldwide. The other kind of hamper on CEO pay in Japan is that that they're benefited by is that they do have these very, very strong, very deeply involved shareholders who serve on the board, and they do provide some sort of a control over it. But let me give you a couple of other bad guys, because we've talked about Home Depot and we talked about Pfizer, but just to give you an idea, last year, our number one, in the report that we issued on CEO pay, our number one most highly paid executive was Barry Diller, who got $295 million. And what is really astonishing about that is that he got 100% of all of the stock options given out by his company. So most companies, they give them to other executives as well, and sometimes to the entire company. He kept them all for himself. The man is already the company's largest shareholder. If he isn't motivated by his current holdings, I'm not sure what stock options will do for him.
And I'm sorry, what company is he with?
He is with a company called IAC Interactive, and he controls the voting shares of that company. So what he's done, essentially, is he has appropriated all the money from the shareholders and put it into his own pocket.
Yeah, and there were some others, too, that we talked about Pfizer, we talked about Home Depot. Weren't there some other high-profile cases just in recent months?
There have been a number of them. At Capital One Financial, Richard Fairbank made $249 million. Yahoo, Terry Semel, $182 million. Here's one of my favorites. We issued this report last summer, and Bruce Karatz at KB Homes we had as the fifth highest paid on our list with $156 million. Well, this is brings up a point that I think is important for us to talk about, which is that he was later fired for backdating his options. So even though he was already making hundreds of millions of dollars the normal way, he just had to go that extra mile and backdate his options to make a little more.
Yeah, and I'm looking at an editorial this morning in our Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that also points out Phil Purcell at Morgan Stanley got about $100 million when he was told to hit the bricks.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Yeah, and the editorial, in essence, is just talking about this corporate pay and, for the most part, Barney Frank's promise to author a bill that would try to allow shareholders to vote on executive pay packages. You're saying that you're not so sure that giving shareholders that ability is going to do any good.
Well, as I have said, shareholders have voted in favor of these pay packages because most of the shareholders are mutual funds. I mean, I told you, State of Wisconsin Pension Fund is exemplary. They're one of the very, very few. But most of the shareholders are mutual funds who are much more interested in keeping cozy relationships with these corporations than voting against the pay packages.
Yeah. Back to the phones, Linda in Monroe. Hi, Linda. You're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. It's a good program. I agree with your guest. Good morning, Miss Minow.
Good morning.
I imagine the company that gives out the most golden parachutes or rewards is Goldman Sachs. Now, you take all their hedge fund dealers and stock options along with a little insider trading and diluting the Sarbanes-Oxley bill, you have a group of corrupt corporations running our government with virtually no regulations on them. Now, that's almost what you would call crooks, but they say it's all perfectly legal, and I'd question that. Please comment.
Well, Goldman Sachs, yes, they do pay an outrageous amount of money to their executives, but at least they are delivering to their shareholders, and the ones that, you know, are my top priority are the ones that get paid for really stealing money from the shareholders or losing money from the shareholders. I got to tell you, I am deeply concerned, as you are, about the proposals to roll back Sarbanes-Oxley, but it has been my impression here in Washington, I live in Washington, D.C., that there is no support whatsoever on Capitol Hill for that, and particularly with the Democrats in right now, they are resisting every possible effort to roll back Sarbanes-Oxley. I think it is not going to be touched.
Thank you, Linda, for the call. Tom in Fond du Lac is with us now. Hi, Tom, you're on the air.
Good morning. I would just like to be the devil's advocate here, not that I endorse this, but you could make the argument that market forces are in effect with the four other highly paid professions that you mentioned. Bob Nardelli came with a stellar record at GE, and it was in high demand. So actually, market forces determined his compensation.
Yeah, you pointed that out, Nell Minow.
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it is market forces when we see over and over and over again, as I said, that the return on investment of these pay packages simply does not deliver. And the reason is that there is just too much coziness between the board of directors. Let me put it to you this way. Ken Langone was on the compensation committee three different places that were involved in bizarrely, insanely excessive pay. One was Home Depot, where, as I said, the pay package was dead on arrival. The way it was set up, there was no way he was ever going to deliver the amount of money that he was being paid for. The other was You've heard of it? New York Stock Exchange. He was involved in that insanely huge pay package for Dick Grasso, the one that got him fired and led to all the scandals. Wait, there's more. He was also involved in, remember, Jack Welch's retirement plan, where his catering bills, his florist bills, his Knicks tickets, his airplane, his apartment were all paid for the rest of his life by the company after he had already made almost $1 billion from them. Yep, Ken Langone was on that committee too. So if we cannot replace these serial offenders in the area of CEO pay, I can't say that market forces are working.
We're talking with Nell Minow. She's editor of The Corporate Library, which is a research firm that specializes in executive compensation and other corporate governance issues. Talking about Home Depot's fired CEO last week, walking off with a $210 million severance package. And he's not the only failed CEO that left with big bags of money. 1-800-642-1234. Is this a problem? What should be done about it? 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Barney Frank, a congressman from Massachusetts, is saying that he's going to hold some hearing on executive pay packages and executives' pay, and probably will reintroduce his bill that would give shareholders the ability to vote on executive pay packages. Our guest says that maybe shareholders should have more of a say in who sits on the board of directors. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We had a caller who couldn't hold on, Nell Minow, but I want to address this question. We talked a little bit about this situation in Japan, about whether or not the CEO could only make a certain amount of money over the lowest paid worker. But he wanted to know if you thought that that could work to some extent in this country. Should there be some sort of law that would try to narrow that gap between CEO and workers?
I don't think so. As I said when I talked about the last attempt to try to rein in CEO pay, somehow every time we try to set some kind of a formula, it boomerangs on us. There are always people who are getting paid a lot of money to figure out loopholes and ways around that. I don't think it has worked. The one time that was actually tried in the U.S. was at Ben & Jerry's, which is a company that has always been devoted to public policy issues. And they tried to tie the pay of the CEO to the pay of the average worker, and it didn't work at all. It worked for as long as Ben and Jerry were in charge, because they had enough stock that really they were indifferent, and also they had other things that they were interested in. But when it came time to getting a new CEO, they were unable to get anybody. So I do believe in market forces. I just think that they have been abused very badly in the area of CEO pay. So I would not try to set a limit. I don't think that would work. What I would do, if I ruled the world, in addition to what I've already discussed in making sure that we could provide some kind of market feedback to directors who do it badly, one other change I would make is this. Right now, CEO stock options are generally given at the amount that the stock is trading at that day, and that doesn't work. And that's why in our report on the highest paid executives, most of them were at companies that didn't even outperform their peer group. I believe that stock options should only be given if they are either premium priced, in other words, that the recipient has to pay for them in some way, or they're indexed to the overall market or to the peer group, so that you don't get the stock options unless you outperform your peers. I do not think you should get paid for underperforming in your industry.
Yeah. I'm looking at a news release from a group called Americans United, and last week they issued a report showing that CEOs at the top companies will make more before lunch on January 2nd than their minimum wage employees will earn all year. You don't think that's a fair comparison?
No, I don't think it's a fair comparison. I mean, in when it works well, these executives are the people who create these jobs, and they deserve to be well rewarded for that. When you think about the prosperity that well-performing executives have brought to this country, not just to the employees, but also to the consumers, to the communities, and to the investors. You know, we want to encourage them. We want them to be paid well. It would bother me very much if somebody who could be a very good executive instead went to Wall Street and didn't create those jobs. So I think that's very important. On the other hand, I believe that a company cannot do well unless it treats its employees very fairly. And that's why I like companies like Costco, where the CEO does get paid quite modestly by CEO standards and gives a little extra back to his employees compared to his peers.
Next, we'll go to Jack in Eagle River. Hi, Jack. You're on the air. Jack. Well, I guess Jack was away from his telephone. I heard the radio on in the background. I'll present his question. He thought that it's more of a comment that publicizing salaries would not be a good idea. Are you calling for publicizing salaries?
Well, they're already public as a matter of federal law. So, and of course, one of the things that I do is I point to the bad ones. So you could say that's giving them more publicity, too. I think Jack's point is legitimate in that every year when Business Week and Fortune and Forbes come out with their annual who gets paid how much issue, it's kind of like the swimsuit issue. You know, everybody wants to run and see it. It's very revealing. It's very sexy. And then all the CEOs look at their boards and say, well, wait a minute, why don't I get paid the way he does? And there is a ratcheting up effect. But again, that's why I believe that the focus on the board is very important and being able to replace the board when they do a bad job.
Yeah, you would like to see some of the Home Depot board fired or quit.
Yeah, exactly. And I would also like to see there's been an activist investor who really has pushed Nardelli out, and I'd like to see him put on the board. That's Ralph Whitworth. But Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis said sunlight is the best disinfectant, and I completely believe that. I think the more information that's out there, the better. And that's why I'm such a supporter of the new SEC disclosure rules.
Yeah. Well, sorry, Jack, that we couldn't get you on the air. We'll go next to Gerald in Bessemer, Michigan. Hi, Gerald. You're on the air.
Hi. Mm-hmm. My comment initially is it seems when you're talking in terms of market forces, it seems like we're all of this is happening at this explosion of executive salaries during the height of the baby boom when there should be more people available than ever before and there should be more competition for these jobs, and yet somehow they've skewed it so this doesn't happen, or at least it doesn't show up in the salary packages.
That's a very interesting point. Yes, we do have a lot of people available, but I will say, in deference to the CEOs, there are very, very few that do the job well. I don't like to see the ones who don't do the job well paid well, but the ones who do well, contribute tremendously. And just like rock stars, movie stars, et cetera, there are very few Julia Roberts and Tom Hankses in the world.
Thank you, Gerald. John in Milwaukee. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hello. I just have a question for your guest about the involvement of the investment community in general in this equation. Do you think the CEO pay is a result of the fact that the investment community benefits by this, and also it's a very incestuous relationship?
That's a good point. I think that mostly it goes down to the board of directors. And let me give you one statistic that bears me out, and we're the ones that uncovered this. There have been a lot of studies over the years looking at boards of directors and who's independent on the board and all of that. And we were the first to find out that the single biggest indicator of excessive CEO pay is not who's independent or whether you have college presidents on the board or et cetera. It's how many sitting CEOs are on the board. And if you have more than one sitting CEO on the compensation committee, you are guaranteed just about to get excessive pay. So what they say is, you know, Lou Gerstner was on the compensation committee that paid Jack Welch that outrageous retirement plan. And he went back to IBM, where he was CEO, and he said, well, this is the standard now. I want the same deal. So he had quite an incentive to give Jack Welch the best deal possible so that he could get it for himself.
We're talking about corporate pay and the golden parachute packages, severance packages that have been in the news in recent weeks, recent months, like Home Depot's fired CEO walking off with $210 million. Should there be a law against this? What's the fix to this? Is this a problem? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Our guest says that the board of directors at Home Depot ought to be ashamed and should either somehow be fired or at least quit over allowing this to happen. Nell Minow is the editor of the Corporate Library, an independent research firm that specializes in executive compensation and other corporate governance issues. She'll answer your questions and react to your views at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's At Issue with Ben Marins this afternoon between 4 and 6. After 5, Ben's guest will warn that the converging stresses of population, energy, and the environment, the world could suffer a catastrophic breakdown. That's coming up at Issue after 5 o'clock. We're talking about corporate pay this hour, whether it's a problem or not that a fired CEO like the CEO of Home Depot last week, Robert Nardelli, can walk away from a job not well done with a $210 million severance package. Should there be some sort of law against this? Our next caller is Tim in Eau Claire. Hi, Tim. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm just thinking, looking at that $210 million, thinking there's an awful lot of people that work at Home Depot that aren't paid very much. And I know from working at a place where I'm not paid very much, that an extra $50 or $60 in my pocket would go an awful lot longer or an awful lot farther than it probably this $210 million went to improve the one CEO's life.
Yes, no question about it. And one of the problems that I have with this excessive CEO pay is that it is such a damper on the morale of the employees because they correctly conclude from that they are not valued the way they should be. And that's, again, why I like Costco, because in Costco, the Wall Street people have criticized the CEO there for giving higher pay and benefits than the competition. And the CEO has absolutely stood firm and said, listen, that's how we get the best people and how we get their loyalty, and that's worth everything we pay them and more.
Yeah, and your bottom line is that if a CEO is doing a great job, that maybe they're worth that kind of money, but certainly not if they're not.
Exactly.
Yeah, Nardelli was CEO of Home Depot for, what, 6 years?
Yeah, and he made a lot of changes there. He made some very good changes, but he... But he did not do anything for the stock price, and that was why he was finally pushed out. Here's another bad example, Carly Fiorina. And this one really frosts me because she did a terrible job at Hewlett-Packard and was fired and was given $180 million, including they paid for her yacht to be moved from the East Coast to the West Coast when she went out to California. Gosh forbid that she should pay for her own yacht to be
Yikes.
Moved. And she did a dreadful job. And what kills me about this is that because of the controversy at Home Depot last year, just at the time that her book came out, she all of a sudden is portrayed as a heroine. Well, she did it. She was a disaster at Hewlett-Packard, and she was horribly overpaid for what she delivered.
Well, do you think now that a lot of attention is being paid to these golden parachutes and this excessive pay for not very good jobs, that somehow the marketplace will just work this out on its own without any legislation?
That will only happen if people like you do not throw away those blue shrink-wrapped proxies. I want you to vote them. I want you to take them out. If you have got your money invested, you should pay attention to what they're paying the CEOs and vote no on these pay plans. But more important, I want you, if you're not part of SWIB, you're not part of the State of Wisconsin Pension Fund, which is, as I said, terrific, then I want you to call up whoever is managing your 401k or whoever is managing your mutual fund and say, are you voting in favor of this? May I have a copy of your proxy voting policies? And you might want to switch to some of the funds that do a good job.
Next, we'll go to Bob in DeForest. Hi, Bob. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to ask Nell about playing devil's advocate, I had not seen the study, but maybe this is from the Wall Street Journal editorial page, but I think they had quoted a study of like New York University, a couple of professors had said that actually executive pay was justified in the sense that the market cap of New York Stock Exchange has ballooned in the past 25 years, and they actually found some kind of correlation between market cap, you know, the total value of stocks and bonds of the company, versus executive pay. Any particular comments?
Yes, I'm familiar with that study, and I, without going into a tremendous amount of detail, I don't agree with it. We find that some of their assumptions are faulty, and I think that one way of looking at it, just for the purposes of this conversation, is to look at exactly the bad examples we've been talking about here. There's obviously something wrong with the system if it is spitting out over and over again these $200 million departing packages for CEOs who have actually brought the stock price down by as much as 40%. So I think that is true. I don't think that market cap is the best measure. I think you need to look at total shareholder return. And I also think that, frankly, I'm a big fan of the Wall Street Journal, but their editorial board, the people who do their editorials are, you know, basically their view is the customer is always right. You know who their customer is. It's the corporate executives.
You have, I just read here that your father is from Milwaukee.
He certainly is.
Yeah.
My dad, Newton Minow, grew up in Milwaukee and went to Washington High School. And I still have a lot of relatives throughout Milwaukee. I love Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, welcome back via radio.
Well, thank you very much. And I appear on WMIL in Milwaukee every week.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good to have you on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank
Tony
you.
In Madison is with us next. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning. I just want to say a couple things. First, regarding Ms. Fiorina from HP, I wanted to say that there was a bit of controversy in her departure regarding some particular surveillance she authorized or apparently reportedly authorized.
Actually, you're getting her confused with her successor, who is Patricia Dunn. And in that case, what happened was, after Carly Fiorina was fired, Patricia Dunn became the chairman of the board, and there were a number of leaks coming from their very most sensitive board meetings, and the directors authorized her to look into those leaks, and the company she hired to look into those leaks without her permission did that, what is called pretexting, to get the phone records, and that was wrong, and she's currently being investigated for that.
Well, thank you for clearing that up. My my other comment on the topic here at hand is the need. Then you mentioned this yourself, that if you were to provide some sort of a mechanism to limit or have an arbitrary number pinned on the maximum that a CEO or executive could be earning, it seems to boomerang back on you. And I was going to say yes, I agree. I'm pretty certain that would happen. And
my
suggestion and question, comment, if you will, is why couldn't we look at perhaps more ability for the and shareholders, the people who actually represent folks who own the stock of a company, to be able to control this themselves, perhaps more directly than even just proxying. But maybe there's a way that this could be structured as some sort of a algorithmic limit, or perhaps a ownership constituency limit of who can own what kinds of stock, preferred, common, et cetera, more than we have today. Perhaps that might be a reasonable solution.
That's a very creative idea. I would certainly support the idea of making that available. That's the wonderful thing about capitalism, is that you can have a number of different structures, and there's no one structure that's going to work in every different kind of company. I will say that to the extent that has been tried so far, it has not worked very effectively, and I particularly am thinking about companies like United Airlines, where the employees essentially own the company, and what do? They take away all the employee benefits, so they've not been any better to their fellow employees than the corporate executives have. So I think it's wonderful to have a wide range of structures available so that you can have what is right for each circumstance.
You know, we had a caller who just wants to know, why don't companies offer some sort of fixed pay system, but with bonuses, really good bonuses for really good performance?
Well, in theory, that is what they do. Unfortunately, what they do is that, you know, as I mentioned, there's that $1 million cash cap, so they pay the CEO $1 million, and then everything else is, quote, performance related. However, what they do is they say, you know, they make the performance goals so easy to achieve that it's not really very meaningful. And one way of doing that is this. It used to be, believe it or not, back, you know, even 20, 30 years ago, that giving somebody 20,000 stock options was considered extremely generous. Now they give people millions of stock options. And if you give somebody a million options for the stock price and the stock price goes up a dollar, they've just made $1 million. Well, hey, that's great. Let's give them 5 million options. Stock price has still just gone up $1, but they've now made $5 million.
Yeah. Dan in White Lake is with us next. Hi, Dan.
Good morning. I would like to point out, I take issue with the notion of your guest that the CEO creates these jobs. If you can remember back to American Airlines bankruptcy, they brought in a CEO to pull American Airlines out of the red, and his major contribution to that was to dump the employee pensions, to dump employee pensions into the federal pension guarantee program. And then when he left several years later, after the firm that handled the bankruptcy in New York, this was all documented on 60 Minutes, by the way, a few months ago, after the firm that handled the bankruptcy admitted that they wouldn't say what their fees were, but they were in excess of $100 million, he walked off with a $428 million bonus package 4 or 5 years after he was hired.
Oh, I completely agree with that. That's exactly the kind of pay package I'm complaining about. I said good CEOs create a lot of jobs. No. I completely agree, and his board got in a lot of trouble for what they did.
Nope. All right, Dan's gone. No follow-up. Rick and Toma, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks. You referred to Nardelli's his termination package as like a golden parachute or a severance. The majority of that money came from Home Depot's negotiation with General Electric, or when he was at General Electric, to compensate him for what he was losing from what he had earned at General Electric. So to get Nardelli to go to Home Depot, Home Depot had to promise Nardelli, we're going to pay you, we're going to give you what you basically already earned, invested at General Electric. That's what it takes to get good CEOs. Now, the company's not always going to be right. They're going to fail from time to time, but that's the risk of going after good CEOs. Are you suggesting they should bypass the good CEOs that are out there because I guess it costs too much money?
Well, that's a very good point. What I'm saying is that those packages actually do not deliver. There's a wonderful book by a Harvard Business School professor named Rakesh Khurana called In Search of a Corporate Savior, who looked at these pay packages over time. They do not deliver. And so, yes, they need it. When Nardelli, or let's take Gary Wendt, another former GE executive, who insisted on a $45 million cash signing bonus to walk in the door and then took the company into bankruptcy. The fact is that if you do not provide people with the proper incentive, they will not deliver on it. And so, yeah, that is what Nardelli required. But that very requirement was what should have let them know that he was not going to be the right CEO for them. What you want is a Lee Iacocca who will walk in the door and say, I will take a dollar a year in escalated stock options. And this is, by the way, what Michael Eisner did when he went to Disney, too. So you want someone who's willing to bet on himself, not someone who insists on being paid up front. Now, with regard to what we call opportunity costs, those are the costs of walking away from his other package. By the way, he was not going to stay at GE. If you did not make it to the top at GE, you are out. So he was at risk either way. You want to say to him, okay, you're walking away from $200 million. We will give you $200 million present value in incentive compensation, and if you hit the numbers, then you'll make it and we'll all be happy.
Well, he wasn't at risk. He was going to get that money at GE whether he left or not. So that's, I don't agree with that. And the other thing, you talked about Gary Wendt. Gary Wendt went into a company that was failing, okay? It was going to
bankruptcy. He was failing, but he turned down a huge and very lucrative buyout offer for that company so that he could stay in there and run it completely into the ground where it went into bankruptcy.
Well, I disagree completely. And if that, you don't like
those
it,
are facts.
If,
I mean, but, those are facts. He did turn down that offer. He did stay. He did run the company into bankruptcy. And I'm saying that if he didn't have the $45 million starting out money, I think he might have had more of an incentive to do a better job.
Well, and at the end of the day, if you don't like it or the investor doesn't like it, don't buy the stock. I mean, that's the bottom line. If you like Costco, load up on Costco. And you don't like Home Depot, don't buy it. But as a shareholder, the shareholders are going to determine what they want. And if I want to own Home Depot and I'm okay with the policies, then I guess that's the way it's going to be.
Yeah, isn't that
okay.
Right, though? But no, isn't it? Shouldn't that be the way it is?
Well, I believe that if you're a shareholder, you buy the right to influence the corporation. That is one of the things that you buy. And if you allow the corporation to do things that are that are not in your interest, then, you know, then yes, you are responsible. But I think that shareholders, particularly through their pension funds and their mutual funds, have an opportunity and really the obligation to influence this. And I think that there is a huge market failure because of the inability of shareholders to replace directors. And if shareholders could replace the directors, this wouldn't happen.
Yeah, what does this do to the share price for a company like Home Depot? I mean, this kind of news. Aren't people upset and maybe selling their stock?
Home Depot, I think that it was the outrageous pay package that Nardelli had, which was, you know, complained about for years, that depressed the price of the Home Depot stock, and I think it will do better. You'll see they'll be announcing his successor's pay package, and I think that will put more confidence into the market. It's going to be a much improved pay package, as we saw at Pfizer.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Jack and Oconomowoc. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. First of all, what is a stock option? How does it relate to a dollar in the bank? And is it worth anything if it's just a piece of paper in the drawer? Is there any tax against a piece of paper in the drawer? And ultimately, how much income tax is paid on this $200 million parachute? I'll take my answer off the air, please.
Okay. Those are excellent questions. Let's talk about, first of all, what is a stock option? A stock option is the opportunity. It's like a contract. You have the opportunity to buy the stock at a certain price. So if today's stock price is $20 and I get stock options at $20 and then the stock goes up to $25, I can buy it at $20 and keep that extra $5 a share for myself. So that is what a stock option is. It is intended to align the interests of management and the shareholders by making him very focused on whether the stock price increases or not. You pay your taxes based on when you exercise the stock options. You ask whether they're worth anything if it's a piece of paper in a drawer. Well, you know, a dollar bill is a piece of paper in a drawer, too, unless you spend it on something. So, yes, it is worth something. Sometimes executives will say to me, the stock option isn't worth anything because I haven't exercised it yet. And I say, well, in that case, can I have it if it's not worth anything? And interestingly, they always say no. They want to keep it because it is worth something.
Mm-hmm.
With regard to the tax payments on the $200 million, yes, he will be paying taxes on those $200 million.
Well, in our final minute, Nell Minow, what do you expect to see in terms of legislation or lack of legislation regarding this particular issue?
Well, I'm thrilled that Barney Frank, who has been long-term interested and committed to these issues, is now the chairman of the committee, and I do think we will be seeing some proposed legislation giving shareholders a vote and giving shareholders more authority to remove directors.
Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Nell Minow is editor of the Corporate Library, an independent research firm that specializes in executive compensation and other corporate governance issues, talking with us about the fired CEO of Home Depot walking off with a $210 million golden parachute last week. Thanks to Karen Prager, who produced this hour. Thanks to Leo Duran for on-air production. Thank you for listening and for calling in. If you'd like a CD of this or any of our talk shows, call the radio store, 1-800-747-7444. Or you can listen to our programs, which are archived and stored on our website, WPR.org, WPR.org. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.